Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast coming at you on a week when we have basketball. The Milwaukee Bucks will kick off the continuation of the 2019-2020 NBA season on Friday, 5:30 tip-off time against the Boston Celtics. We're going to talk all about it. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. On the other line, as always, is Matt Velasquez. He is the Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering those Milwaukee Bucks, and we'll certainly talk about that now, looking ahead, but you should know also the night of. Friday afternoon, I guess, depends how you look at 5:30 in the afternoon. We are going to be talking about the game as it's happening. Check out us on your second screen, either via Facebook or other means. You'll have to stay tuned to jsonline.com. We'll let you know every place where you can find myself, Matt Velasquez, Lori Nickel, Olivia Reiner, talking about what we're seeing. We're going to be watching the game right along with you guys. It'll be like you're in a sports bar without the COVID threat, where we're talking about what we're seeing, breaking it down. Matt, of course, will offer the ton of insight that he has covering this Milwaukee Bucks team. We did a dry run of that, Matt, last week for one of the scrimmages when the Bucks opened up the scrimmage slate against the Spurs. That was a lot of fun. It was good to just kind of sit back and kind of shoot the breeze about basketball for a while.
It was fun. It was like a novel experience. You know, we were watching basketball again for the first time in many moons. And so that was good to get to see you guys and talk to you guys during the game. It was a little bit hard to keep up with the game as we were doing that, but I think that with that experience, you know, we'll get better. We'll have the reps under our belts. We'll be able to get some real fan questions. We're hoping that, you know, some of you guys who are listening will also, you know, listen to Jim Paschke and Marcus Johnson, Steve Novak. Do that on your TV, but then also just pull us up on your computer or your phone and, you know, listen to us a little bit. We'll talk and we can answer some questions and be interactive and try and have some fun, keep it light. I think it'll be a fun experience. It's something totally new that we are trying. If it works, we'll keep doing it. If it doesn't work, maybe we'll just never do it again.
That's true.
You know, that's one of the things about this, you know, pandemic season or bubble season or whatever you want to call it. We got to do different things. I'm usually there at the game, watching stuff, and, you know, at this point in the season, Lori's probably sitting right next to me, you know, and then when the playoffs come around, JR's there and Olivia's there and Ben Steele's there, and so, like, we are talking during the game to some extent, and we're discussing things, and, you know, so I think we're trying to give you a little bit of that, since we're just like you. Like, we're watching at home just like you guys are, and, you know, this way we can all kind of watch together and just try something different.
Yeah, 100%. You're calling me out kind of by saying I just parachute in for the playoffs. That's exactly what I do, let's be honest. So I'm hopeful we get to do some of these broadcasts for the playoffs. That's going to be the stuff where, you know, every Bucks fan's been looking forward to for forever now. Basketball is arriving at a very good time. Baseball has had a lot of problems, a lot of big news story Monday about pretty much half of the Miami Marlins coming down with positive COVID tests, and that's wreaking havoc on the schedule. And of course, they're not in a bubble. The NBA is down in Orlando, Florida. So we're fortunate. I guess if you're an NBA fan, you're fortunate knowing there's a better chance that they can get through this season, get through into the playoffs, and crown a champion. Milwaukee Bucks will be a contender for that, of course. We did get to see them play some games in Orlando. Scrimmage action, starting against the Spurs, like we mentioned. Played a couple games after that. Actually lost their third scrimmage game on Monday night. J.J. Redick, all hail J.J. Redick, who got hot and put the Bucks in their place. But obviously scrimmages are, I mean, at least I thought of them as just glorified practices, but I would say that is not how the Bucks treated these games, especially, and I think this has sort of been the top-of-mind conversation to come from the scrimmages. Giannis played a lot, and he played hard. He was not out there just getting in reps. The guy was either, I mean, I'm sure like a lot of people, thrilled to be back on the court, but you had mentioned that you were curious to see how Mike Budenholzer would deploy his minutes. He used a lot of minutes on Giannis and his star players. I mean, it definitely wasn't it definitely wasn't just a glorified practice. So were you surprised that we saw that much? I mean, these games don't even, we've talked about the regular season games that are left. They're not a huge deal either at this point for the Bucks, but these scrimmages really don't count. That is not seemingly how Mike Budenholzer and his stars treated it. So what was your reaction to seeing all of that?
Honestly, I don't think he even played that much. You know, you saw other players like LeBron on Monday. He didn't play at all. Anthony Davis has an eye thing. He didn't play at all on Monday. But 23 minutes is not really all that much. And that's the most that Giannis played in any of the three scrimmages. He got a lot of time off. If you're looking at the second scrimmage, the one on Saturday, I think he only played like 15 minutes. So it wasn't like he was playing. I mean, 23 minutes, I guess, is kind of close to his normal season average of like 31. But you also have to recognize like his minutes in a regular game this season have been really low in general. So like just because he's close to his season average doesn't mean he's even playing all that much. Once the playoffs come, he'll be playing 36, 37, 38 and pushing over 40 more than a few times. You look at like LeBron to use as another example, and the Lakers second scrimmage, he played 25 minutes. The most any Bucks player played in any of these scrimmages, I believe, was Chris Middleton, who played 26 minutes against the Pelicans. So, you know, I think that Bud was trying to walk the line of getting guys reps, getting them action, and also not playing them all that much. Playing half the game and kind of spreading those minutes out is not all that intense. I think it's allowing guys a chance to get reps, get their cardio up, build up that experience again. Okay, I'm playing like game minutes against other people. Like, how do I get back into that gear again? And now, you know, Tuesday, they had an individual day, a kind of a lighter practice. Not even a whole team setup. Just everybody goes in, gets their individual work done, and that's it. And I'm guessing they'll probably have more team practices on Wednesday and Thursday, heading into Friday's game against the Celtics. But I think right now, if you're looking at the Bucks, I think the best thing for them is that guys have gotten a chance to get out, scrimmage, like kind of build up their basketball muscles again. And as of right now, everyone is mostly healthy. Eric Bledsoe and Pat Connaughton have cleared quarantine and are with the team in the bubble. Marvin Williams has a slight groin injury that kept him out of the preseason game. Frank Mason has a slight back injury that kept him out of the Monday's game. I don't know that either of those is expected to be too serious, but we'll have to see more next time we get to talk to Bud and the team. But right now, I mean, a relatively healthy Bucks or a mostly healthy Bucks is really all you can ask for.
Yeah, you mentioned Mason and Williams, and in a way that it's kind of a bummer that those guys weren't able to play in the scrimmages. All of them, I should say. They certainly got some time out there, but those guys didn't get reps as much. Marvin because he came over, you know, late in the season, and Mason simply because the team didn't need him quite as much as other players. So you'd think those scrimmages would be an ideal laboratory to sort of rebuild some of that chemistry that maybe they didn't have the chance to build throughout the first part of the regular season. But they are at full strength, like you said. Pat Connaughton and Eric Bledsoe have checked into the bubble. We have not seen them on the floor, and I'd be curious to know, and this goes back to our conversation about how the Bucks are going to treat these regular season games, because they're, you know, I believe the magic number is 2 to clinch the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. Any combination of wins or Raptors losses will do it. So I can't imagine they're thinking of it as much more than what we've seen in these scrimmages. So I'd be curious to know what you think we're going to see from Bledsoe and Connaughton, if they're just going to get, you know, minimal minutes as they work their way back to strength and back to chemistry with the team, or if we're going to see them similar to what we'd see with the scrimmages, where everybody, you know, kind of gets their 10 to 15 minutes and maybe a few players get into the 20s. But what is your expectation, and what do you know from what Coach Bud has said?
I wouldn't expect for either of them to play against the Celtics. That's just my gut feeling. We haven't had a chance to talk to Bud or get any kind of information about their health or their availability. I don't even know if Pat's practiced yet. When we talked to Bud on Monday, I think he was still kind of like relatively in the dark in terms of Pat being around, but Pat had spent like the whole day, I guess, out and about in the bubble. So he had cleared quarantine, but he hadn't really done much with the team at that point. The big thing that Bud has said is that, you know, those guys weren't able to do anything, like literally anything, while they were, you know, quarantined at their homes, awaiting the, you know, the coronavirus going away, like waiting for it to go away, for them to be turned back, and be able to return negative tests, and all that. Like, when you are asymptomatic with coronavirus, I mean, it's so new, there's not really, you know, a ton of, blueprints that you can look at for what to do. But generally speaking, if you have a virus like that, even if you're asymptomatic and you know that you have it, like, no medical person is going to say, oh yeah, go ahead, just keep working out, like, keep doing stuff. Like, the idea is to make your body as strong as possible to fight that virus, and you don't want to be expending energy doing something that's not fighting the virus. So, you know, getting on an elliptical or like a, you know, a stationary bike, that's taking energy that your body could be using to fight the virus. So those guys, you know, like Bledsoe said when he talked to us, they were basically laid up for 2 weeks. So just taking that long of a period of inactivity and then trying to turn, you know, and pivot and go straight into playing basketball at a super high level, that's really hard. So I'm guessing that Bud and the team staff, the medical staff, are going to try and ramp those guys up behind the scenes, get them work, monitor them, make sure they're doing okay before they just kind of throw them into the fire and have them playing regular minutes. So I'm not sure if they'll be available for Friday's game. My guess would be no, that they're going to take that, you know, very cautiously. Bud has famously used the phrase aggressively cautious in the past. And I think he'll definitely be aggressively cautious when it comes to those guys. And everyone else, I think once the real games start, I think that he'll start kind of like, you know, loosening up on the minutes and getting it back towards, you know, real game numbers as the situation dictates. I think this is just a hunch again, but I think with Marvin Williams, you know, he is a little bit older. He's a veteran. Maybe Bud just said, you know what, if you're feeling any discomfort at all, let's just sit you. There's no point. It's a scrimmage. We're not going to mess around with this. So, but I think we'll get back to normal minutes, and, you know, they do have the luxury of not having to worry about seeding. Like, they're going to be the one seed. There's going to be some combination of Bucks wins and Raptors losses that equals two. Like, it's going to happen. So I think that, but I think the players really want to be able to build some momentum in this regular season, in these 8 seeding games, and then turn it forward to the postseason. Now, will there be some times where Bud takes that out of their hands and says, today's going to be a Frank Mason, Sterling Brown, DJ Wilson, Thanasis Antetokounmpo game? Yeah, like that could very well happen. But when those guys are out there, I think they're going to want to play as much as they can. They're going to want to win these games because they want to be able to get back into the rhythm of playing well, of winning, and everything that they had been doing before the season stopped.
Certainly there was an adrenaline rush if Bucks fans want to watch good Bucks basketball. During these scrimmages, there were stretches where they did very much look the part of the, you know, the top team in the Eastern Conference and in the NBA. There was a particular run that comes to mind in that Spurs game, the first half against the Pelicans, when they scored 80 points in the first half. Hello, Milwaukee Bucks.
Against the Kings.
Oh, sorry. Yes, the Kings, that second game. 80 points in the first half. Just ridiculous. So that's pretty encouraging. What do you any other takeaways that you saw from the scrimmages themselves? Any players looking a little different? Any new elements that you weren't expecting that maybe you could get carried into the regular season?
Well, I mean, I think for the most part, the Bucks are the Bucks. They are who we thought they were. And they're kind of back to doing that. Giannis is still Giannis. That nothing has changed there. His free throw shooting has been good. But you know, we'll see if that's something that, you know, maybe because it's in an empty gym or a quiet gym and he can feel like it's practice, like maybe that's working out. Like, that'll be something to keep an eye on. But if he can go 12 for 15 at the line, that's generally going to be a good thing for the Bucks. One, that he's getting there that often, and two, that he's making them. And I think that Chris Middleton, he was also good. Brooke Lopez was shooting a lot better than he did during the regular season. You know, we'll see if being that close to Disney continues to pay dividends for him.
It's the opposite of kryptonite. Like, when you're close to your home planet, you get that power boost.
Exactly. It's like Brooke Lopez, you know, he needs the yellow from the sun to be strong. Like, it's the same. He just needs to be close to Disney to be strong. So I think that it'll be interesting to see how that continues for him or how that goes for him. Obviously, he had a really long summer last summer where he was playing with Team USA. And so maybe, you know, as much as he did, maybe his legs just never caught up. And maybe that could just be reading into it and kind of making up a story or a narrative. But as of right now, I think he looks fresher. He's moving well. He's shooting the ball well. These are all positives if you're the Milwaukee Bucks. On the other end of the spectrum, I think George Hill didn't make a three at all in those three scrimmages. I think he might have been bizarre. Like 0-7, 0-8. And granted, like, those are scrimmages, but his three-point shooting had kind of been tailing off a little bit as the season had gone on. He's still ranked as the best three-point shooter by percentage in the league. So you expect the only way to go is down. Like, he's not going to keep shooting 50% forever. And again, it is a scrimmage, or these were three scrimmages, so maybe you don't read a ton into it. But the Bucks are going to need him to be productive, to get his own shots, because he's so good and so focused on getting other guys open and distributing the ball and making plays for others. They're going to need him to make shots and plays for himself sometimes, and so him being able to do that will be important, especially if Eric Bledsoe's out for a little bit. I think Dante DiVincenzo's defense, stepping in as a starter, I think he's fit in really well. His defense has been really good, getting a bunch of poke steals and flying in for rebounds, just doing all the Dante things you would expect. You know, but for the most part, the Bucks are the Bucks. Like I said, like, they're doing the things that they do. Bud threw in a little bit of zone here and there, which I think is just him, you know, throwing curveballs. Yeah, just experimenting, throwing curveballs, just messing around in a bunch of preseason games that don't matter. I think there might be maybe moments or stretches in certain games or series where he might go back to it just to mix things up. But that's not going to replace who the Bucks are. Like, they know who they are. They know what their defense is. They know how to play it. They know that it's currently the top rated defense in the league, and it's not even close. So they're gonna go back to doing what they do and do that consistently. With any changes that they make on that end, in particular, being, you know, situational and usually short-lived. So we'll have to see how they handle it. But overall, the Bucks are the Bucks. They looked fine. They were awful, particularly in the second half, you know, maybe the last 2.5 quarters against the Pelicans. You know, but it's a scrimmage, and you kind of take that with a grain of salt.
Nothing says basketball is back more than the pained expressions of Mike Budenholzer. Like, that maybe is part of what lends credence to my thought that he was taking it, you know, more seriously than I would have gathered, because he was very frustrated in that game against the Pelicans. And that is Coach Bud. He's not gonna, you know, he's not gonna just chill just because it's a scrimmage. And I'm sure he's thinking about the bigger stakes, the bigger picture. But very fun to see him back in action on the sideline as well. I guess we could pivot here to the awards conversation. We've had some conversation about this already. We've talked especially about the MVP award, which, again, awards voting is if not complete yet, is going to be complete by Wednesday. The awards ballots need to be turned in before the season resumes on Thursday. I know you voted and you turned in your votes already. And we talked about MVP. I know there's seemingly a debate out there about LeBron James versus Giannis Antetokounmpo. It seems 99% chance that Giannis is going to win that award. So we don't really need to discuss that one much more, but there are some more compelling cases. Defensive Player of the Year, which is going to have a Bucks slant to it, is among those, I would say. But also, I'm also interested in Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year, a few other things. So why don't you give us a little spin through your awards ballot and where you landed on some of these races?
Yeah, so like you mentioned, the votes were due. By the time people are hearing this, I'm sure it'll be Wednesday. We're recording this on Tuesday, and ballots had to be in by Tuesday night. So I agonized over it for a couple days and thought about it a lot and bounced it off some people and came up with something that I'm comfortable with, that I'm sure, as comfortable as I am with it, I'm sure I'll want to change something or, you know, wish I had thought of something at some point, but, you know, I think I've done everything I could with it. Giannis was the MVP on my ballot. I always get nervous, especially with people like Giannis or like Anthony Davis, people who have the same last name, like, because it's a drop down menu, and you could literally vote for Thanasis Antetokounmpo as your MVP.
Oh, no.
So I was like, all right, am I voting for Giannis? Like, am I voting for, like, you know, like Anthony Davis, like in different situations where he could have been on my ballot in different awards? It's like, okay, am I voting for Anthony Davis or Ed Davis? Like,
this is how Drake, like the school Drake, winds up with first place votes in the AP poll when somebody tried to vote for Duke, you know, because they're next to each other alphabetically on the drop down menu.
Yeah, it's stressful. It's those little things that mess you up. So yeah, I had Giannis number one, LeBron two, James Harden three. It's not really after that. It's kind of just like, okay, I had Kawhi Leonard and Luka Doncic after that, and I kind of wanted to put Chris Paul in there, and I kind of wanted to, you know, I thought about maybe putting Anthony Davis there. And at the end of the day, like, I just like re-looked at Luka's numbers, and I was like, that is insane.
They're crazy. Yes, like, absolutely insane.
They were really good. And like, I know Chris Paul was like super good, and like, he's the main reason why the Thunder are what they are, and one of the best stories in the league. And I actually had Billy Donovan as third in my Coach of the Year voting, in large part because of what they've done and how he's been able to harness the players that he has and the team that he has, especially with all the changes they've made. So that's where that went. I was big on Bam Adebayo. I feel like that's shown through on my ballot. I had him as most improved over Brandon Ingram, which I think is a debate. But overall, just like, I think Bam showed more and different things and in a larger role, whereas I think Ingram just had an expanded role in a new environment, and he was really, really freaking good. And I feel like he puts it on the Bucks like all the time in terms of like shooting back when he was with the Lakers too. So, but I think Bam just, you know, his two-way impact is just incredible.
I saw one of those speculative headlines on Twitter, and of course I'm talking about it without having read it, but suggesting that the Heat would be willing to let Adebayo walk as a means of freeing up cap space for that year when Giannis might be available on the free market, or that they, not necessarily because of Giannis, although that's the subtext. So that would blow my mind because he's been so good for them this year.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not saying he's Giannis, but you don't let a Bam Adebayo walk. Like, that just seems mind-boggling, right? Like, he's jumped up, you know, so much in his time with the Heat. I mean, he's become a pivotal part of what they do on offense and defense. He's just incredible. The way that he can spread himself around on defense and guard different positions and also guard the paint. Guys bigger than him, small, it doesn't really matter. He can do so many things. I've just been really impressed by what he does. Speaking of defense, I had Giannis as my defensive player of the year. I think that'll be a runaway, just because he can do everything on the court, whether it's, you know, on the perimeter, on the inside, him on the inside with Brooke Lopez. I mean, even without Brooke, but with Brooke for sure, hit him and either of the Lopez's, like, how are you going to try and score on that? Like, those guys, there's a reason why teams aren't scoring at the rim, and it's a large part because, you know, there's always going to be, almost always going to be, Giannis and one of the Lopez brothers, and Giannis, especially as the help side guy, just causes so many problems, and he's so versatile. If you follow the Bucks, you know this. Like, you know all the things that Giannis does as a defender. The team's defense it isn't necessarily structured on him in the same way that like Utah's is structured on Rudy Gobert. But there's he is probably the biggest reason why it is as good as it is, which is a, you know, historically great defense. So I had him there. Looking down the ballot, I had George Hill as third in my six man voting. Montrezl Harrell, I had him at first. He was just so important for the Clippers, and just the way that his energy off the bench, I feel like he encapsulates like being that sixth man a little bit more, just because like he comes out with just such ferocity and just brings that energy in a different way. Not to mention like his two-way impact on both ends of the court and the way that he's able to close games for them as a small ball five, and playing the pick and roll. He's just so devastating in the pick and roll. I think that, oh, this is funny. So I'm looking at my ballot right now, and I mean, Montrezl Harrell is there, but it says LAL instead of LAC. The NBA goofed.
It's not your fault on the pull down. It's the NBA's.
It says Montrezl Harrell, Lakers, basically. Whoops.
The system couldn't understand how the two top candidates for this award were playing for the same team. They're thinking, start those guys, LA Clippers. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, yeah. And let's see. You mentioned Rookie of the Year. I didn't have Zion on my ballot. He just didn't play enough games. John Morant, he's going to run away with this. Actually, I decided to put two teammates 1-2, John Morant and Brandon Clark. Those two guys for the Grizzlies, I mean, that if you're looking for a foundation, you know, between what those guys are, you know, what those guys have brought, plus, you know, Jaren Jackson and all the young guys on their team, Taylor Jenkins has a good group to work with. And I'm excited to see what they're going to be able to do for the rest of the season. Obviously, they're in eighth in the West. You know, so we'll see if they're able to hang on. And if they get into an 8-9, you know, playoff situation for that last spot in the playoffs, I mean, that would be super fun and compelling, too. I did have Zion on one of my all rookie teams because who remembers who's on the all rookie teams anyway? Like, just put the best dudes in there.
No one remembers them.
And he's definitely one of the best dudes in terms of these rookies. So he's there. Keeping to Bucks focus, I had Bud as second in the Coach of the Year voting, behind Nick Nurse. I think Nick Nurse, just the way he was able to take this team and keep them rolling, despite losing Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green, and have them at second in the East right now, is just so darn impressive. And the way that he's done it, you know, with having a million injuries and having to cycle through guys up and down the roster, it's just been really good. I think he's gotten pretty much like the maximum out of that team by being able to adapt and change and adjust with his lineups and what they do on the court. So I think partially this didn't really figure a ton into my vote, but I think that there's going to be some of my media brethren who will kind of say, you know what, like Nick Nurse was awesome in the playoffs last year and the way that he handled that and like guided that team. So you get some of that carryover, right? Like he's kind of earned a little bit more stature, a little bit more of a push toward Coach of the Year because of what he's accomplished in the past, which isn't necessarily how it's supposed to be. But there's going to be some carryover, I think. And it's not to say that Bud hasn't done a great job. He's been incredible. Getting the Bucks to go from like really, really good to like historically great. And by help creating an atmosphere where basically everyone on the roster got better, and they were able to handle the loss of Malcolm Brogdon without missing a beat at all. I think that's all incredibly impressive. But I think that the job Nick Nurse did was equally impressive and a little bit more under, at least unexpected, I would say. And so that kind of puts him over the edge for me. Looking at the all defensive teams, I had Giannis, obviously first team all defense. And then I had both Eric Bledsoe and Brooke Lopez on the second team, which I think is, at least for me, as someone who watches them consistently, more than any other team, like it seems like just understood, like Eric Bledsoe and Brooke Lopez, like they work together so well in the way that Bled takes the point of attack and then funnels things to Brooke, and the way Brooke kind of cleans things up on the back end. You know, I debated a little bit having Brooke over Rudy Gobert, and I just couldn't get there. I know the stats. I know the Bucks have been campaigning hard, you know, sending out all kinds of information, both through email and on Twitter and on broadcasts about Brooke's stats. They even targeted like which stats Brooke was better at than Rudy Gobert, and they put it into a tweet and made sure that was out there. But I think that it's hard to say that he is first team center when he also has Giannis next to him, and that's unfair to him. Like, but you know, it's not like he is the everything of the Bucks defense, whereas like Rudy Gobert is the everything of the Jazz defense, and the Jazz defense is very good because of him, along with all the other things that he does individually. So I think that Brooke, to the fact that we're even talking about him being on second team all defense, is a huge step for his career, a huge progression from where he had been in the past, which is basically just like he was an all-star in Brooklyn because he was a scorer, because he was a dominant inside presence on offense, not because of his defense. And so I think he's put a lot of effort and taken a lot of pride in his defense, and it's definitely showed. And so I think he deserves a spot on the all defensive team. And I guess like the last thing is the all NBA teams. And I really had trouble with this because the NBA has gotten more lenient with their positional voting. Like you could put LeBron as a guard this year if you wanted to.
I didn't realize.
Which they never let you do that. And like you, so everybody on the wing is basically like totally flexible between like guard and forward, or almost everybody is. And it makes it super duper difficult. Because you want to get the best guys in there, but you also want it to be like functional and like kind of make some sense. And there are certain guys who it's like, I wouldn't list like James Harden as a forward. And this just doesn't make sense with my brain. Like, so I'd want to have him in a guard spot, or like Damian Lillard or Chris Paul. Like, those are guards. Like, I'm not going to put them in a forward spot, even if the NBA lets me to. Like, you could even put Nikola Jokic as a forward. He's not a forward. He's a center. There's almost too much freedom for me right now. So I messed around with it for a while. And eventually I just had to kind of slow myself down and just think about who was better, who fit best. And like, I try and make some teams that made sense to me. I ended up, having, Giannis, LeBron, AD, Harden, Doncic first team. I think it's a pretty solid first team. The big kind of changes or the big decision came in the second team, where I had Chris Paul, Damian Lillard, Kawhi Leonard, Nikola Jokic, and then I put Chris Middleton in the second team All NBA.
Second team.
Yeah, I thought about putting Jimmy Butler there, and Jimmy does have some better numbers, some better averages. He obviously has a different impact on the Heat than Middleton does, though they have a similar usage. I think Middleton actually has a slightly higher usage for the Bucks, so he plays less minutes. But it kind of just came down to Middleton's creativity and the way that he has added to his game. His shooting is much better than Jimmy Butler's. Butler gets to the line a lot more, so a lot more of his impact comes at the line. And I think that when you take Middleton's scoring, rebounding, passing, some of his advanced numbers, his shooting, and the fact that he's been a big part of the Bucks having the best record, I gave him the nod. Also because I couldn't imagine him as a guard. The guys on my third team, I really liked the guys on the third team, and I just didn't feel comfortable putting like Chris Middleton as a guard on the third team or Jason Tatum as a guard on the third team. Jason Tatum feels more like a forward. And so it just didn't fit right. So I kind of just flip-flopped him a little bit because of the positional things. And whether that's right or wrong, I'm not sure. But I think it still works. I think Chris is still deserving. Third team, I ended up having Russell Westbrook, Jimmy Butler as the guards, Jason Tatum, Pascal Siakam as the forwards, and then Joel Embiid as the center. I don't think everyone's going to agree with that. I hope not everyone agrees with that, because there's room for valid opinions. There's room for some movement, up there. I think there are, like 100 voters and millions of other fans, and everyone's going to have different ideas of value. But I believe that all that stuff is at least in the ballpark of being reasonable. I tried my best with it. I ran by some people, and they all said, oh, that sounds reasonable. Like, it might not be what they would do, but it sounds reasonable. And that's all I'm really going for, is just trying not to like mess up and like, some kind of like ridiculous way, like voting for Thanasis Antetokounmpo instead of Giannis.
Yeah. It's all really interesting. I would be elated, first of all, if Chris Middleton were on third team All NBA. I think that would be a massive honor, and certainly recognition for the season he's had. Some of the guys you named, I think ultimately the calculus will be people looking at him versus a guy like Jason Tatum or a guy like Jimmy Butler. And Jimmy Butler being just that second tier of NBA royalty, I think, is going to get the nod, whether or not the numbers back it up. And Jason Tatum had this sort of hype-filled breakout year that I think will also put him in the minds of most voters ahead of Chris Middleton. So that might ultimately stand in his way, But I think you've got it justifiable. That's the key, right? Being able to justify your picks, then you're good as gold, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, I could see from some of the ballots that are already out there, I think there are a decent number that will probably have Middleton and Tatum both on second team. And so I think that's probably – or not second team, on third team. I think they'll both be on third team. I think that might be how it shakes out. I don't know. With all the positional flexibility, like, you know, if you put LeBron at guard and you move Luka down or you, something like that, and you open up a new spot, like, there's going to be a whole bunch of, like, crazy mismatches of balance, which is good and fine. And I just hope that the NBA has the infrastructure, and I'm guessing they do, to calculate those picks at different positions and be able to place guys, like, based on the number of votes they get, make sure to put them into spots where everybody gets a fair shake. So, like, if you're, you know, for example, you know, LeBron, if he gets voted at a guard by some people, voted by as a forward by some people, like, you want to make sure that, like, those votes are tallied and he's, like, do you place him at a guard or a forward depending on other players' votes? Like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm, right.
So how does that all, how does that puzzle come together? And so it'll be really interesting to see how they shake that out. Obviously, the NBA is pretty good about being transparent. We're at the end of everything when they announce the awards. I don't even know when that'll be. But whenever they announce the awards, they do share everyone's votes, all of the voting totals. So you'll see, like, you know, whoever has the most points, like, if someone has more votes or more points from the votes and isn't on the team because of a positional fit, I think they'll have to, you know, do a lot of explaining and make sure that is clear. So we'll have to see how that all goes. And I mean, I like the positional flexibility, but it does add another layer of complexity to trying to figure out who are the 15 guys who are most deserving this season.
Yes, you will all be outed. All of your selections will be in the open for people to dissect. So you can expect the visits from the trolls at that point. Before I let you go, one last thought. We talked a little bit about the eighth seed, how really we can sort of analyze what team the Bucks are going to face in the first round of the playoffs. They're probably going to win that series regardless of who they face, even if it's Orlando, probably the least depleted of the potential eighth seed teams. But as we get going Thursday, as games begin again, there are obviously teams that Bucks fans are going to want to pay some attention to, including some front runners in the West as potential challengers for that NBA title. Any particular storylines you want to see? I mean, obviously the Eastern Conference would be more top of mind. Anything from the, you know, Sixers or the Raptors or the Celtics that you're really curious about as it relates to, you know, a chase for the championship?
Yeah, I'm interested to see how the second through sixth seeds shake out in the East. You know, Toronto's up three games on the Celtics, but, you know, I think those teams play at least once. Like, the Celtics could catch up and get to the two. You could also see where, you know, the Heat, Pacers, and Sixers are all within two games of each other. So how do those seeds shake out? Who is where? Obviously, like, you know, the 4 or 5 series really doesn't matter if you're 4 or 5 because there's no home court advantage.
Right.
But how does that segment of the bracket going to shake out? Like, there's only 8 games to figure it out, but that those 8 games could lead to some movement. Right now, the Pacers and Sixers are tied for the 5th spot, which the tiebreaker goes to the Pacers. So does that change over the course of 8 games? What do teams look like? And obviously, you mentioned, you know, with baseball, can teams stay healthy? So far, with all these scrimmages, the bubble seems like it's working. Teams have been able to play. They're getting tested every day. They're making sure that no one is coming down with the virus and that it's not spreading. They're not creating any situations that would put the season at risk. But can they keep doing it? And, you know, we obviously had the Lou Williams Magic City Wings. you know,
they're very good wings, Matt.
I've heard that. I know someone on Twitter mentioned to Eric Name and me that should be a stop for NBA road eats. Eric said, you know, hey, this is a family show. And I said, well, you know, wings are a family favorite. So, you know, it's a situation that's come. I mean, we can see what happens. Maybe they do delivery, right? Maybe they're
exactly.
Their wings are going to become so popular because of Lou Williams. I've seen actually a couple stories, people going there to give reviews based off of Lou Williams's glowing endorsement. You know, maybe they'll do delivery. I can go to Atlanta and get some delivery of Magic City wings and not make my wife angry. And keep NBA Road Eats, the sanctity of it at a PG level. Yeah, so we'll see if the NBA can keep it going. I think that everything so far is promising, but you never know. You can't bank on anything nowadays, that's for sure. In the West, I think that it'll be interesting to see, like I mentioned, the Memphis Grizzlies, 3.5 games up on the Blazers and the Pelicans. to see if they can hold on. They're almost totally assured that they will at least have a chance to do a playoff for that 8-9 game. As long as the 9 seed is within 4 games of the 8 seed, it'll trigger a playoff. But, you know, can they hold their own and maybe even increase their lead and not have to do a playoff? Obviously, everyone wants to see, you know, stars and players like Damian Lillard and Zion Williamson potentially in the playoffs. So we'll see how that shakes out towards the bottom. I think there are a bunch of different seeding things that could happen in the middle of the West, where like the Jazz obviously don't have Bogdanovic. So will that cause them to drop and thus kind of change where everybody's seated in the middle of the West? But everything just comes down to right now, at least, it's the Bucks, the Lakers, and Clippers who everyone believes are head and shoulders above everybody else, and it's kind of, you know, theirs to lose. I think everyone expects that the Bucks should be able to at least make the conference finals in the East, which doesn't mean it'll be an easy road, but they are the prohibitive favorite. Whereas the Lakers and Clippers, everybody's expecting that would be the matchup in the conference finals in the West. But this is why you play the games, JR. The NBA at least let us figure out who's best this season by coming up with a way to play this season in a bubble. So, we're going to get to actually find out.
And you'll get to hear us finding out right alongside you guys if you visit jsonline.com. Hopefully you'll also find the Journal Sentinel Facebook page. That's where we will be doing our live broadcast during the game, our sort of sports bar setup where you've got Matt Velasquez, myself, Ben Steele, who I don't think I mentioned in the first part, will probably be part of this as well, Lori Nickel, Olivia Reiner. We will be discussing it as the game is unfolding. As you are watching it on your TV, pull us up on your phone or your tablet, and we'll join you and just have a conversation about what we're seeing about the Bucks' return to basketball. Again, the game tipping off at 5:30 p.m. on Friday from Orlando, Florida, the Bucks and the Boston Celtics. Like you said, a team that might end up being the Eastern Conference finalist right alongside the Bucks. So a very intriguing matchup for competitive reasons and also, of course, for the return of the NBA. Thanks for joining us, Matt Velasquez. He is the Bucks Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Bucks. I know you're looking forward to Friday. I can sense it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Basketball, again, I think I've said it every time we've ended the podcast, like, basketball is back. It's actually happening, and now it'll actually count for someone who's counting.
Yes. Find the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Thanks for joining us. We'll do these weekly because there will be actual games to talk about, and we will catch you again next week. Thanks for listening.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. Once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.